This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Vayner Nation, what is good? We are back on the podcast 2022. I'm really not planning on doing too many interviews or episodes. I'm focused on V Friends and Vayner X. I think the speaking, the books, even the content, I'm down to the lowest levels this week in 7 or 8 years. But when I get an opportunity to do a show where I think all of you who are listening are going to really enjoy the combo or have wanted to see the combo, I've definitely heard through my navigating of the world that people wanted Mark and I to interact or how would we jam. And I'm really excited that he's on the show. So I'm going to let him introduce himself and how he likes to speak about himself. I'm curious myself. And then we'll get into a little bit of like book life because he's a beast. And then maybe just shoot the shit on a bunch of different stuff. So Mark, how are you?
I'm great, man. It's great to be here. I can't believe we've actually never talked before.
The amount of people, you know, there's people like you. There's probably 15 other people over the last decade that, you know how like, it's almost like a neighbor you have, you've never talked, but you head nod, you know, like I've always felt that I had these kind of like people that ran in similar circles, shared friends.
Yeah.
And it was just sheer serendipity that we weren't at the same conference, at the same event, that, you know, that if we met 7 years ago at a South by Southwest, we would talk 13 times a year versus not once for seven, you know, like it's one of those kind of things.
Totally.
It's actually, when Kobe Bryant passed, I actually promised myself to slightly do a better job. I've done a little bit of a better job with it, but I'm such a mad scientist in my lab, my family, which is my real life, and then professionally, my laboratory and my crew around my laboratory cheer and root for everybody on the outside, but spend so little time on it. So I find myself in these predicaments where... But I want to be a little more thoughtful because I definitely feel like I've always loved the way people have talked about you and that know you, that know me. So I'm happy we're here.
Yeah, me too, man.
Thanks.
So quick intro. I'm actually from the blogging world. I started blogging in 07, actually discovered you back in like 09, 2010. Basically blew my career up going viral on Facebook and Twitter. Back in the day, back when you kind of could go viral on Facebook, yep. Twitter, grew a massive audience, millions of readers each month, parlayed that into a publishing deal. Books did super well, have sold about 15 million books.
Crazy numbers. How many have you written?
Four. One self-published and then three conventionally published. The last one was I co-wrote Will Smith's memoir with him. It came out a couple months ago. And then
what was the experience in co-writing?
You know, with him, it was great. I don't really aspire to be a memoirist or a ghostwriter or anything like that. It's just,
he was cool enough and the whole thing was cool enough to do.
He and I really hit it off, and I think
did you come across Brad Haugen in his world? I know he's on the productions. Did that name? I think he works on some of the content site. Good friend of mine. Anyway, keep going.
But yeah, I mean, he and I, like, he was in the right spot in his career to do the book, what I would call correctly, you know, which is like actually open up and actually get into kind of the ugly parts of his life.
Yeah.
And then I think he and I just like on a personal level, our skills and personalities complemented each other really well. So that ended up, and I mean, I'm a 90s kid, so
yeah,
he's the fucking
prince. I get suckered into things all the time.
Yeah. So, but honestly, I mean, it was such a great experience, but it's funny because I mean, now that that book has done so well, you know, I've talked to my agent. She's like, you know, other celebrities going to want to do stuff and sure. Blah, 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 and people are going to reach out. I'm like, you know, I don't know, actually. Like, I don't know if that's something I really want to focus on. So
it sounds horrible.
I think if you don't have the right person or if there's not a good chemistry, I think it would be horrible.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way I think about VaynerMedia, like clients. Like, it actually is hard. When I talk about eating shit, I don't think people really understand. Like having, when you're creative, having somebody, two cooks in the kitchen is incredibly challenging.
Yeah.
It's not that it's horrible. I use that as a slang term for, man, that you want to say serendipitous and the person wants to say, you know, by chance. Like, you know, I love my art of being a content producer and being a businessman, and have absolutely with my father, my brother, you know, especially when it's family like that, had challenges when, you know, I knew what I wanted to do was right, but I wanted to be empathetic or have compromising capabilities, or, you know?
Yeah. So, for anyway. Sure. And it's, there were moments where it's like, there were certain things that I felt should be in the book or certain directions I thought certain chapters should go. And it's, at the end of the day, it's his book.
His book. Yeah.
You know, so.
Good for you to have like some, because some people with no leverage and juice aren't great at having that humility. You came in with some real front-facing consumer leverage. You know, obviously the reason so many people have brought you up to me is because I say the word fuck so much, and you've like obviously, you know.
It's such a dumb reason for people to associate us, but.
it's incredibly fair. Actually, I've had more than a couple people ask me through the years, probably five, which is a lot if you think about it. Hey, are you pissed he wrote that book?
Oh,
like, I'm like, no, I'm pumped he wrote that book. I was like, I'm like, you know, not from like that, more like they just really think there was a lot of crossover of beliefs. And then obviously the word fuck, I think. Actually, just to go right into it, because there's so many marketing, branding, content people. You have two books with that in it. Sorry, I have a cough, everybody. Sorry if this hurts the podcast a little bit. Do you think, like, the brilliance of what Tim Ferriss did.
Mm-hmm.
I met Tim around that time as well. We were all kind of running around in those, you know?
Yeah.
And he ran Google AdWords to figure out which title would work.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, Ryan Holiday and others. I watch how people navigate. Do you think that in the title had real impact, no impact, some impact on the success?
Real impact, for sure. Impact. I mean, so that book, you know, you mentioned the Tim Ferriss thing, running AdWords to kind of figure out 4-hour work week. A lot of subtle art was very much market tested through blogs.
Yeah.
So there are you knew
what was working.
Absolutely. And that title, so I originally started writing that book with a different title, and then I wrote an article called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and it went fucking bananas. And I was like, oh shit, okay, maybe this should be the book, right? So there are a lot of sections in that book that grew out of viral blog posts. You know, it's like, I know this works. I know this like gets people. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. For the people listening, what is the 1-2-3 sentence recap of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, the 2016 book that went bananas?
Basically, it's, I always joke that it's a book about values, but it, you know, if I told people it was a book about values, nobody would read it. So you got to put fuck in the title and kind of trick people into it. But
you do realize you just completely in two sentences recapped my entire career. Well, I would argue
here's the thing, Gary.
The amount of shit I eat.
Here's the thing, man.
Please,
I think you and I landed in this spot for the same reason, because you and I live and breathe and eat and sleep the online social media world. And what you quickly discover when you're in that world is that there's an infinite amount of stuff out there. And so if you don't figure out if you don't discover values to sort that stuff, if you don't figure out like principles of like, this is what matters to me, this is what's important to me, and this is just crap that I'm going to ignore, you're going to drown. And I quickly just, you know, coming from a self-help angle, I quickly discovered that a lot of my generation's problems, a lot of the anxiety and depression and stress that my generation goes through, it comes from just not figuring out what those values are. What are those sorting mechanisms in your life?
And then when you don't have your own, you're grabbing onto people's.
Totally.
Grabbing to others, you're completely succumbing to outside affirmation. And the second you are living for outside affirmation, it's game over.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I remember seeing the book in the airports, because I'm always in the airports, right?
Yeah.
And it grabbed me too, like every other human. And I remember feeling a huge, you know, I do to my community famously talk about how little I read, but I remember feeling an incredible kinship just on title. I also believe so much of the world's problems is headline reading and making assumptions. So yeah. Just, like, I selfishly asked you that question right now for my own self, but I really do believe that getting into a comfort zone of understanding the following. Do the people that know me the best like me?
Mm-hmm.
And do the people that know me the least have a chance of liking me or not liking me? Is a very simple framework that can help. I mean, every day I get accused of things that are not true, get negativity thrown at me. And I'm a pretty positive communicator. Like, I'm trying to, yeah. You know, but I have a style that I think rubs people. The conviction and the confidence and the, you know, the competitiveness. Like, I get it. I understand why it lands like that. I also think like alpha male energy timing is a little awkward, and I'm empathetic to that. Those are macro trends, but everything that makes it palpable, that not giving a fuck, of course I care, but it's having a structure of understanding. But do the people that know me like me? And then as you get further away, does it still stay as good? Like, strangers thinking that I'm a charlatan makes sense. 13 second clip on a video, you know, but my mom thinking that's devastating. And I think there's a lot to that I think a lot about.
Well, it's also just the world that we live in now, right? Like, we're exposed to so many other people all the time, and so many other people are exposed to us, that it's unreasonable to think that everybody who comes across you is going to like you.
But I think there's a bigger thing, Mark. I love your thought on this. I think we're also in the explosion of popular culture judgment and pushing away as fast as we can any level of accountability. So judging is on fire, and accountability, everyone's running away from. Pointing fingers, super fun, popularized. Point grabbing thumbs, devastating, nobody wants to do it. Thoughts?
Absolutely. One thing I wrote about when the pandemic started was, like, I feel like people have this addiction to, like, moral righteousness. Like, it's actually becoming a problem. Like, I think we should become not less moral, but like more amoral, like withhold judgment on like what is actually good and evil. Because
you're the judge, when you're the judge and the jury, it's a game of opinions outside of the things that most common sense, nice human beings can agree on. I don't think anybody's on the side of murder.
Yeah, of course. But I think, you know, it's so easy to pass judgment, like moral judgment, on people or groups of people today. And there's so little repercussions. And I think that is like, we've got this like crack addiction to moral righteousness as a culture.
Well, it makes you feel better.
It feels meaningful, but there's no consequences.
Yeah, I think to your point, we're gonna really nerd out on this. I think it's an indicator of more collective unhappiness, because I think we're in a bigger game of outside validation.
Yeah.
Because when you're unhappy, the trigger of tearing somebody else's building down is an endorphin, and is a hit emotionally for you that helps you prop up in the short term.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it speaks to, you know, it's funny, people will blame technology, social media, things of that nature. But I think it really starts, to your point, back to what you did in 16, it starts on values. Like, if parents raise their children in, and I'm a capitalist and I'm an entrepreneur, but I love the game. I'm not in it for the Lambo or the watch. And if you're teaching your kids that, like, it's all about those things, like, we're going to aspire to get a Mercedes-Benz, or, you know, you got to lose 15 pounds because you don't look good, or like all these different things, everything you're doing to reinforce that the outside world's judgment matters. I'm the greatest beneficiary of a mother who built me the reverse.
Yeah.
Nothing else mattered but what happened in our four walls, and are we nice to people and to each other, and call it a day.
Yeah, for sure, man. I want to ask you a quick question.
Please.
You mentioned very briefly at the beginning that you're backing off on content, and you are somebody who's created a prodigious amount of content over the years. And I've also been backing off on content over the last year or two. I'm curious to hear why you're doing
friends. I probably won't deliver on my hyperbole in the beginning here. It's that a new thing came in to my life and you only have so many hours. Family, you know, matters most. Then professionally, which is my great hobby, I got to allocate a little piece to my dad's business because I love him too much. So I got to keep a little eye on Wine Library and Wine Text. And then I have a behemoth of a company, over 1,000 employees globally, you know, Mexico City, London, APAC, LA, New York. VaynerX is now a big dog. That's a lot of work. I'm the active CEO and I'm like an active CEO, like a COO CEO. So that takes up a ton of time. The only other thing that took a time before was Gary Vee, right? Speaking, books, content. With VFriends coming along, it's a really tricky one because not only do I have to be the CEO operator, it's a big company. And you're dabbling with NFTs. I want to ask you about that because I saw that somewhere.
Absolutely.
That's become a huge company. Jesus Christ. It's kind of even hard for me to like wrap my head around. But I also have to build, it's not like VaynerMedia where I didn't have to build the brand. I just had to build a company. I mean, I could have, but I built it in a B2B environment. It was a whole unique strategy. VFriends, I have to build Patient Panda, Empathy Elephant, you know, Curious Coyote. Like I have Conviction Cockroach. I have like real work to be done.
Yeah.
Call it, you know, DC Comics, Marvel, Disney, Transformers, He-Man. So I'm a great storyteller and marketer. I believe that. But I have to put that energy now into Patient Panda and you know, an Empathy Elephant and, you know, Adventurous Astronaut, not into Gary Vee.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Here's a good analogy. I've got to become more Walt Disney than Mickey Mouse. I've got to become more Vince McMahon than Hulk Hogan. And the reason I use Vince McMahon and Walt Disney is they still were pop culture and like you knew who they were. They weren't the CEOs of like GE, you know, you knew who they were, but they weren't at the front of the lights.
Yeah.
What? Tell me what's going on in your NFT stuff, because I've seen that a little bit in the social sphere.
So I'm a bit behind the curve to you, but you know, I discovered NFTs last year, basically like dropped everything.
You knew it.
Started neglecting everything in my.
And are you like are you like me that way? Like blogging when you first saw it, you're like this social. Yeah. Like you've got that kind of, you've been lucky to be born with that innate kind of, you know, something's happening.
And it kills me a little bit because it's you know, now I've got like a team of people. I've got like an online business. You know, we're selling courses. We're doing all this stuff. And like, I feel bad now. Now it's like, you know, back in the day, I could just drop everything and be like, hell yeah, NFTs. Now I'm like having
this. Welcome to my life.
Yeah, like getting all.
My 3:30 meeting is with, you know, like a toy retailer trying to do a huge deal for the holidays. And my 3:45 is like, we have this problem with the client. Our project manager is not, you know, you're like, oh man, this is not as, it's hard.
Yeah. So I'll use this opportunity. So this is exclusive. And this is the first time this has been
publicly announced. Let's go. I don't get a lot of gets. I'm excited.
So I'm going to bring Subtle Art. We're going to fractionalize Subtle Art and bring it to the NFT space. We're going to carve it up into 1,000 individual quotes. And, The way copyright agreements work with publishers is that the publisher is licensed to the full book. But if it's just a quote or if it's just a paragraph or a section, the author can do whatever they want with it. So what we're doing is we're carving up the book into individual quotes and paragraphs. And then I'm basically going to give Creative Commons license to those individual quotes for whoever...
purchases. So if you buy the NFT, you get the quote, and then you could quote unquote do what you want with the quote.
Do whatever you want with it. Yeah.
You're buying it from you.
I can't give the copyright of the quote.
You're giving the
fucks with all sorts of stuff, but
you're getting the Creative Commons rights, kind of like Flickr was back in the day when everyone's like, "Whoa,
yeah."
Creative
Commons. So it's, I'm not going to mess with you. So yeah, super excited.
Right.
About
that. So when I buy a bunch of your most famous quotes, and then make hoodies and sell and make tons of revenue, you won't send me a letter.
No,
And you're going to be like, why is Gary able to sell more hoodies of my quote than we were?
I wouldn't ask that about you, but
fair enough.
but some random kid on the street.
Mark, when are you, so this is cool. I got to get, when are you doing this?
Looking at late February, early March.
All right, we'll keep an eye on this. Where should people follow you? Like, what's your Twitter? Cause I'm sure that'll be the best place to, for this audience to.
Twitter is I am Mark Manson.
I am. Got it. What, in our 10 minutes here, what other things should entrepreneurs, go-getters, kind of, what are some other things that we can help people with? Or what do you, anywhere you want to take this, like a fun story working with Will, an insight to what's working with you on content right now? Cause a lot of, I think we have enough crossover that where you take it, this audience will like, so whatever you want.
Well, I'll say this. I asked you the content question because, I mean, for me, it's been a combination of discovering Web3. Like it's, I mean, I've been in the crypto for many, many years, but it always seemed, it was like too Ponzi-ish years ago.
It was all currency, right? Like I really understand the Bitcoin thesis and I'm still long at Bitcoin because I think the brand is too strong.
Yeah.
And NFTs are so much more consumer, what you and I do. Yeah. It's not currency.
It's this last year or two, it's like, oh shit, they're actually building stuff. Like
let me give you an example.
Yeah.
NFT project gets pumped and it completely fails.
Yeah.
Like it went up to 4,000 a piece and then in the NFT winter, they're $88. I, in 2026, I'm going to buy 8,000 of them and the IP and refurbish it. No different than what I did with K-Swiss or what happens with brands all the time. With a shit coin from 2017, it pumps. We had the shit winter. It's dead.
Yeah.
There's still an asset with NFTs and a narrative that makes it very, very different than coins. And I think that I'm really excited about when we get to that part of the story.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, like there's so many books throughout history that blew up after the author died, you know, or like
Can you give us two or three? Cause I'm not educated in that stuff. I love that shit.
Ah, well, like, so like Scarlet Letter, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Like,
is that true?
Yeah, or like Moby Dick, like fucking Herman Melville like died broke and alone, like, and then Moby Dick became the great American novel after he died, you know? So it's, this sort of stuff happens in publishing, and I'm super excited about NFTs in the publishing world as well, because it solves a lot of
the issues,
practical problems the publishing industry has. And it's crazy too, because like doing this NFT.
Are you currently in a book deal?
Yes.
How many more do you owe them?
One.
Yeah. My last book that just came out, the one I sold a drillion of because I did an NFT thing.
Yeah.
I'm a free agent and I'm in the weirdest spot.
Yeah.
I've had an incredible one with HarperCollins. Who do you work with?
Harper as well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
You don't work with Hollis, do you?
No, I don't know. Okay.
My publisher is Hollis at Harper Business. Okay. She's amazing. I find myself in a crazy predicament. I'm super happy there.
Yeah.
Comfortable.
What can they offer you? That's the thing. It's like, what can they offer you?
And I want them to, right? Because I'm doing plenty of my own stuff. I'd like to have a couple places where I have some partnerships, but the economics are too extreme if my next book is an NFT and you get the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And it was fascinating to me as well, because like when I first approached Harper about this NFT project, I expected tons of pushback, you know, and I expected them to kind of flip out and I'd have to do damage control. And to my surprise, like I wouldn't say they're on board, but they are
open.
They're very open and curious. Like they are watching very closely.
Well, listen, they saw, you know, one of their authors sell 1.2 million books in a day. And you and I know what that means. I mean, I know, I'm not the, I've done really well. You've done really well. Those are just uncomfortable numbers.
It's crazy numbers. It's crazy numbers.
And those are moments in time. I think right now we're in internet stock 99. That's the one thing while everybody's listening, just a quick tidbit. It's almost like a disclaimer. I always want to say the NFT thing is real. It'll be here forever in a big way.
Yeah.
So learn it. The individual NFT projects, 99% of them are in Beanie Babies mode.
Totally.
They're getting super hyped. They're going to crash. You know what else was in Beanie Babies mode? Internet stocks at 99. And that's what happened. But Amazon and eBay were there at $7 a share. You could have bought them. You could have bought Amazon for $7 a share before all these splits they had. It's insane.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, go ahead. You were finishing a thought, but I was curious if you're debating as a prominent, you know, author, like, do you sign a book deal or do you do it yourself now with NFT Land?
I honestly don't know. I mean, we'll see how this launch goes. We'll see how the market goes. I mean, like you said, it's there's definitely a bubble right now. So like we'll have to see how things shake out. But I could totally see in like 2-3 years from now it being a very, very difficult question to answer. But what I was gonna say before that is like I feel like I'm also in this weird like no man's land because I'm so excited about Web3 stuff, but it also feels like it's still very frothy and new and not completely consolidated or figured out yet. Meanwhile, like on the Web2 side, on like the traditional social media and blogging and everything, everything just feels like, I don't want to say dead, but like saturated, right? Like it's ROI is so...
Brother, it's the tale as long as time. The reason you and I in 07 and you did blogging, the reason you found me in 09 was... I would say the most frustrated I was in my career, in my entire career, was 2005 to 2009 because I couldn't write. I still can't. I can't write for a lick.
Yeah.
And I saw blogging coming and I'm like, and you know, and I'd won on kind of e-commerce and search and email for sure.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is going to be huge. And I knew that I was like on the sidelines with like my helmet in my hand. and literally the second, oh, I'm sorry. I got my timer wrong. 03 to 06, 04 to 06. Because the second YouTube came, I was on it so blistering fast. That's why my wine thing worked so well. Because I was like, okay, I can use the new thing. And then obviously social, the new thing. And then every app on social. But you're right. Like it's going to take the next TikTok to do anything in Web2, but even that is gonna be a slight alteration of what we've seen since 05. Yeah. Web3 is like crazy new world, which is what we were learning about the internet back in the day.
Yeah, it's Web2, it just feels like you're taking the same playbook and applying it to new platforms.
That's exactly what
you're doing. Over and over.
It's a real art, like knowing how to capture the art of TikTok versus Instagram is a real art, but to your point, you're still making a short form piece of content in video form.
100%. And it's after 12 years or whatever, like it, you know, it kind of, you kind of just keep getting the same thing over and over. Whereas like Web3, it just feels like we're in like 3D chess.
No, it's like finding America.
Yeah.
You know, like you thought it was just Europe and you're like, wait a minute. No, it's really like that. It's our version of that. Final thoughts. Give me, you know, I feel like we may have to do this again because I want to extract. What are some hot takes from a social commentator? What are you seeing out there? What should people think about? What is a good, what are some good takeaways?
Oh,
hey,
man.
Hey gang, keep an eye on this, whether it's literal like OTT shows or like pop culture or common emotional themes you're seeing and just like takes.
I feel like there's kind of like a great moderation coming. Like, I feel like a lot of what felt so unstable with social media and just the news media in general throughout the 2010s, I feel like it was a lack of education on the user's end of like people don't understand how social media feeds affect their moods, their information consumption, the way they think, the beliefs that they adopt. And I think the general public's knowledge of how these things work is catching up to like where you and I were.
Yep.
5-10 years ago. And I think as that happens, we're already seeing it now. People are just learning better, like learning to turn off all the noise and bullshit. They're learning to back off, not hit the reply button so fast.
Yep.
And I see a kind of a new boom of like independent voices happening right now. I'm like so bearish on traditional East Coast media right now. It's crazy.
What does that mean?
East Coast? New York Times, Washington.
Got it.
You know, shit like that. Yep. It's just, I just think it's just a sinking ship.
Yeah, I mean, I think all traditional media needs a different model.
They do.
It's not even about, for everybody listening, it's not a left or right thing. It's funny when you said a great moderation, I've been using a purple heart. I've been falling in love with the color purple. I've been spending so much time in this. Too bad my favorite color is green, but I'm gonna figure this out. I am completely convinced that what's about to happen is purple. You and I, we need to really actually become friends. We're clearly very similar in a lot of ways. I'm sure very different in others, and those are the fun parts. But the world is so red and blue.
Yeah.
And the answer is purple. And yeah. And sometimes it's dark purple, and sometimes it's very light purple, but like it's so clear that we will die. And this is not even like from politics, like you know, like socialism or storming the Capitol. It just becomes societal. It becomes like operational. It becomes your day-to-day life.
It's everything. It's not just, I mean, it's most visible in politics, right? But like,
correct, but it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Like I'm a big gamer. I see in the gaming community, it's like the loudest, most insane 2% of gamers are the ones that you hear about all the time. You know, it's like the fucking crazy sports people are the ones you hear about all the time, you know? And
it's our own fault for loving rubbernecking.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I feel, I hope slash feel that people are, they're smartening up to this. And I think this is why you're seeing like Substack take off. You're seeing like, you know, there was a chart recently of like Joe Rogan's numbers compared to all like the, what do you call it? Cable news shows or whatever. And it's like, you know, his audience is as big as like the five biggest cable news shows combined, you know? And it's like,
I mean, people are 700,000 years old that watch cable news. Yes. Like we have to understand that. By the way, I think ageism is a problem. I'm not shitting on 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. I'm almost 50. Fuck, you know, year olds. I'm shitting on the concept that the world's evolving, that I have unlimited friends who are 71 years old, who know what Substack is and like read like all sorts of different things and are just like, and I have very interesting friends who are willing to watch both Fox and CNN and this and that. And it's not even about like the politics anymore. It's just the formats.
So here's a thought for you. I'll leave you with this thought. You know, when I was a kid, I used to make fun of my parents because like we get like a VCR and my parents didn't know how to program the VCR and like my brother and I would figure it out, right? And we would like make fun of my parents like, oh, I'm so bad with technology. It was like a funny thing in the 90s to be an older person who was bad with technology. I think now it's potentially like a social problem.
Well,
like,
and also I think we judge them so negatively, and then the NFT thing fires me up because all my 20, 30 and 40 year old friends became their parents overnight. Cause they're like, I don't want to learn this. It's a JPEG. Like watching 27 year olds say it's a fad, watching 36 year olds say like, I can't figure out a non-custodial wallet. Like I don't want to Coinbase. Like they're scared of this the way parents were scared of putting credit cards into a computer. Like literally watching 20 and 30 year olds over the last 12 months become their 65 year old parents has been one of the most joyous things for me because I let them, I trap them. I let them, cause these are my friends. I let them. And I'm like, that's the shit you used to make fun of your mom for.
Yeah, totally, man. Totally.
Technology. We'll talk, brother. Congrats on all your success. We will cross paths again. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, man.